there's no provision in the Housing Act as it stands for people who have human rights issues beyond domestic abuse, and a very weak provision for people with disabilities. But that CIRA can point out the flaws in the law and the overarching influence of the Human Rights Act.
Yep, we can try to do that, and actually that's something that we've been trying to do with the assistance of other organizations in Toronto with the Toronto waiting list system for years, is trying to raise our concerns over the problems with a chronological waiting list system.
Uh-huh.
And how that severely disadvantages certain groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
from being able to access appropriate affordable housing in a timely manner. And so that's, we've always been trying to work on getting some kind of review and change in the guidelines in terms of the waiting list. Because one thing that the Social Housing Reform Act, which you were referring to earlier, does do is it does give municipalities some discretion in terms of setting up their own priority system.
Just and many of them have not chosen to.
Yes, I think that's the case. And again, I'm not really, you know, totally 100% up on this.
Yeah.
But there is some, my understanding that there is some discretion, and so we want to try to work with communities to wherever possible to modify the chronological system that they have in place so that it's fair to families with children, to people with disabilities, to people who have other barriers to accessing that housing.
Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. Disrespect welcomes to the show John Fraser, Acting Director of CIRA, Center for Equality Rights in Accommodation in Ontario.
Okay, it's been a while since we spoke to you, John, on the show, Disrespect, and you've been through a long process of career evaluation and commitment again to civil rights and housing. You must feel very strongly about it.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and now you've ended up as acting director at CIRA. Why don't you relate a little bit about the progress of CIRA and the concerns you have with housing today?
Right. We were originally established by a coalition of low-income families. And who want to remove the adult-only apartment rules that were in place.
All right.
Because in the prior to the late 80s, it was legal to have adult-only apartments. And so that's really how CIRA came about. And after that, CIRA was set up as an organization to help ensure that these new human rights protections in housing and the existing human rights protections in housing would be effective for low-income and other disadvantaged communities in Ontario. And since that time, when we were first established, that's really been the heart and soul of what we've been doing. And we've done that partially through working directly with individuals experiencing discrimination in housing, but also working more on sort of systemic issues of discrimination as they relate to housing and poverty.
Right.
In terms of the casework that we do, the kind of discrimination that people experience who are coming to CIRA crosses a whole range from being turned away from housing because they're receiving social assistance, having barriers in place in their housing related to medical conditions or a disability, people who are new to the country who can't meet entrance requirements from
right.
landlords, and and families who are being turned away because of the fact that they have children or because of the number of children that they have. So it does cross a whole range.
Well, am I correct in assuming that your project-to-project funding ensures a greater degree of impartiality to funders than ongoing core funding would, however convenient it would be?
Well, not really, actually. I mean, it would seem that way, I think, but in some ways, there's the danger of even less impartiality because we've really got to make everyone happy.
Well, perhaps I've taken the wrong perspective on this. It strikes me, though, that you would be a little better insulated against undue pressure from any one of those funders.
That's true, definitely. So if we did have a problem with an individual funder, we do have a number of other funders that we work with, so that is true. It's always been a difficult thing to fund because as an organization that doesn't have core funding, we're project-to-project funded. Our human rights casework was shut down entirely. We did receive some funding to start up our individual human rights education and assistance starting in mid-2004, and we've been operating it since that time. So we do continue to provide individual assistance to people facing discrimination.
So what's changed in the last few years?
There's not the same degree violent negativity that we found, or just such a poor bashing approach that we found with the previous government.
Okay,
that's definitely not our experience with the current government, and so that's very positive. The less positive aspect is that we haven't really seen a lot of concrete improvements at this point, and a big case in point is we've been waiting for a couple of years now for new landlord-tenant legislation to be released,
right,
which has been promised over and over again and continues to be delayed and pushed back. So that's a big frustration.
Yeah.
And just also the continuing re-announcement of existing affordable housing dollars and the repackaging of existing affordable housing dollars new costumes, but they're in most cases the same money.
Right. Are we basically treading water, waiting for a change in direction?
In terms of our housing policy, it seems that we take a very incremental approach to these issues, or our governments do, and so when changes are made, they tend to be very on a very small scale. And the reality is that the changes that need to be made are going to cost money. They're not going to be free, and they're not going to necessarily be cheap. We think that they're worth it, and we think that Ontarians and Canadians support spending on issues around housing, and that people see that as a fundamental need of people.
There are programs in place of which you hear very little, and which I can't help but think municipal governments are ambivalent or unsure of wanting to promote access. And one of them, I don't have the name of the program, you probably do, but one of them is this program to subsidize existing apartments, which has been funded on a pilot basis for some time and was supposed to have been passed into law. Have you heard anything about that?
My perspective is on that program is more limited to what I've heard in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly politicians and policy people in Toronto have been promoting that program quite heavily.
Well, how is it accessed?
It's already been accessed. I mean, we have an existing rent supplement program through that's accessed through the same means as all the other social housing in Toronto.
Oh.
So you would go to the central waiting list, and you can access both rent supplement units and units in existing social housing providers.
But your waiting time would be the same.
Yeah, your waiting time's not necessarily going to be any faster. And then the pilot projects that they've been working on just don't have a lot of supplements attached to them.
With rent allowances staying the same pretty much as they've been for the last dozen years,
yeah.
Heating costs going up,
yeah.
Hydro not taking any softer a line. There are a couple new organizations. One is a housing loan program.
Right.
And there's a utility subsidy program on a one-time or limited access basis.
That's right. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about how that situation may have changed recently and what kind of adjustments are being made for people on low incomes?
Right. There are a variety of projects. There is the Red Bank loan programs that seem to be in place to varying degrees in communities across Ontario because there has been provincial money that came out last year specifically for Red Bank programs from the province of Ontario, and that's to help with arrears of rent to assist tenants who are having an emergency and just can't pay their rent for a month or two, to give them some support and get them back, you know, squared up with the landlord so that they don't lose their housing. That's a great program, except for the fact that it's dealing with emergency situations, and certainly for the people who call us who are facing eviction, a lot of them are in emergency situations, but a huge proportion of them just have general affordability problems.
Yeah.
And they just, their rents are too high and they can't afford their rents, and so those kind of situations aren't really helped by the Rent Bank temporary assistance kind of program.
The utility support financing too.
Right.
Is that in place and is that working? I've heard good things about it, but I've not met anyone who's benefited personally.
Yeah. My experience with it has been positive in terms of the people that I've known who have tried to access it. The one problem is, and again, I'm sort of Toronto centric on this one, but it's a bit of a confusing system because we in Toronto have three different programs that are utility programs. There was the Winter Warmth Fund, which is a gas program sponsored by Enbridge, and that could help people who had gas arrears. And then there was the Emergency Energy Fund, which was operated by the City of Toronto, which helps people who basically have a disconnection notice and need assistance with hydro arrears. And then there's the Share the Warmth program, which is a much more widespread nonprofit program that's not necessarily connected directly with the municipality or the province, that also provides assistance with utility arrears. So there's all these different programs that tenants can potentially access, but it's not always clear which one is the best one to access.
And now for a short break from our interview.
Thank you.
And now, return to our interview.
We're still in this revolving door situation, and there's nothing new coming down the pipe. You say it's all been repackaged, so we've seen everything that's being applied to housing at this point.
Pretty much, there's been. I mean, I'm definitely not the I'm not the expert on this, on the supply, affordable housing supply that's coming down, but my understanding is definitely the announcements have been made at the federal and provincial levels, and we now do have a federal-provincial agreement for affordable housing, and they have announced the units that will be coming down over the next couple of years. And it's not, you know, we know now what's coming, and it's certainly not what we had hoped for. It's not the kind of numbers that we need.
Yeah. Now, there are some problems with the administration of the wait list. One is that the city requires that the wait list operators do what they can to reduce the wait list, but have a number of policies that put people back to the beginning of the waiting list. One is the problem with keeping in touch with the agency.
Yeah.
If they send out a questionnaire and you don't get back to them in time, you can end up back at the end of your 12 or 14-year wait time.
Yeah.
The other is apparently transfer of eligibility. If you've applied for a municipal nonprofit and you want to get into a co-op, for instance, they put you back at the beginning of that, too?
Oh, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly was aware of problems with people losing their place because of losing contact. Now, some co-ops have their own internal waiting lists that are separate from the centralized waiting list, which could...
Even today?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Right.
Some co-ops do. Not all of them, but some co-ops definitely do. And I think they're actually the... I think they may be the co-ops that aren't connected with the municipal
federally funded co-ops.
Yeah, the federally funded co-ops.
How would someone find out what they are? I guess they'd call the co-op housing association, eh?
That would probably be the best way. Yeah, the cooperative housing federations of the different cities and of Ontario.
And someone who had a complaint about the waiting list, who would head up? What's the waiting list organization called in Toronto, and who would head it up?
Well, the waiting list. Generally, for social housing in Toronto, it's called Housing Connections.
Okay.
And they would literally contact Housing Connections directly. So when we're dealing with, we often have people who are calling us with issues about the waiting lists and needs, their particular needs with respect to the waiting list and problems with the waiting list, and we would just contact Housing Connections directly and talk to people who are managers.
Right. So you think people might have a hard time getting through to, say, Derek Valentine?
Yeah, that might be tough, for sure.
Okay.
He might not be able to return the calls.
All right.
But you never know.
All right. So people in Toronto, or people across Ontario, I guess, who are having problems with waiting lists, if they come up against a wall or they end up on a treadmill, could contact your organization for some guidance.
Definitely. And particularly the kind of cases that we work with around the waiting list where there is a human rights issue. So you know, if there's some reason why the person needs, for example, a special priority that's related to a human rights issue,
or
need some kind of transfer,
related
to a human rights issue, then we definitely are happy to talk to the managers of the waiting list to try to help promote compliance with the Human Rights Code. We do get calls, though, from people who just want to know if there's any way to speed up the process, and unfortunately there's no way we can just speed it up.
Right. I understand there's no provision in the Housing Act as it stands for people who have human rights issues beyond domestic abuse, and a very weak provision for people with disabilities, but that you can point out the flaws in the law and the overarching influence of the Human Rights Act.
Yep, we can try to do that, and actually that's something that we've been trying to do with the assistance of other organizations in Toronto with the Toronto waiting list system for years, is trying to raise our concerns over the problems with a chronological waiting list system, and how that severely disadvantages certain groups of people from being able to access appropriate affordable housing in a timely manner. And so that's, we've always been trying to work on getting some kind of review and change in the guidelines in terms of the waiting list. Because one thing that the Social Housing Reform Act, which you were referring to earlier, does do is it does give municipalities some discretion in terms of setting up their own priority system.
Just, and many of them have not chosen to.
Yes, I think that's the case. And again, I'm not really, you know, totally 100% up on this.
Yeah.
But there is some, my understanding that there is some discretion, and so we want to try to work with communities to wherever possible to modify the chronological system that they have in place so that it's fair to families with children, to people with disabilities, to people who have other barriers to accessing that housing.
So you see improvement in the future. If it's going to come, it's going to come in this direction of recognizing these needs that are not now recognized in the demand and the supply of housing.
We'd like that, definitely.
Okay. If people want to contact you, how would they do that? Are there a number of ways?
There's the easiest way is, if people are outside of Toronto, we have a 1-800 number, so it's a toll-free number, and they can contact us at 1-800-263-1139.
800-263-1139?
That's right, and that's a toll-free number, and if people are calling on a human rights matter, we do have a human rights intake line, and it's our extension 22.
Okay.
And that line is checked daily.
And they can get to it off that 1-800 number.
That's right.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your, you know, running over the ground again with us. It doesn't seem like a lot has changed, but it seems like maybe some doors are open and we're looking for the light behind them at this point.
I think so. I mean, I don't want to sound too negative about things. If things haven't changed dramatically, I mean, that's sort of the sad thing. I remember being with a person I work with, a colleague of mine, and she had this amazing binder of newspaper clippings on housing issues that go back to the 60s, and it was actually pretty disheartening. We were looking at some newspaper clipping from 1966, and it could have read 2005. It was exactly the same.
40 years later.
Yeah, the issues hadn't changed at all. So to a certain extent, I'm things sometimes can feel pretty bleak, that you're going one step forward and two steps backward.
Right.
But on the other hand, we have definitely seen some positive movement in the past 2 years on the housing front, and looks like we may have some positive movement in terms of reform of the Human Rights Commission process in Ontario. So coming up in the fall, so some things are happening.
Oh, all right. I appreciate your comment on that. Thanks, John, for your time on the show today.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right.
At the middle of the show, you heard John Hammond, and from his album God Love If You Want It, No Place to Go. At the end of the show, Michael Bloomfield's album If You Love These Blues, Thrift Shop Rag. Did you hear the successful ending to Brian Wood's 6-month search for housing? Well, Disrespect is now archived on the web at www.radioforall.net. That's not the word for, that's the number, radioforall.net. You can now download and listen to the show whenever you want to hear Disrespect. And we'd also like to hear what you want to hear on Disrespect related to disability, discrimination, and equity. radio.stories@gmail.com. If you're interested in the show, you think you might learn how to do digital editing, send us your name and your email. Again, radio.stories@gmail.com. We're looking for a volunteer editor. Disrespect, we'll be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.